I'll now call to order the adjourned meeting of September the 5th, 2018.
And we just need a motion to adjourn.
We have a motion to adjourn that meeting.
So am I.
Well, I mean, I wasn't here either, but we got to vote on it now. So we have a motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0.
We'll be back on schedule, sir.
All righty.
That's the first time we've not had before.
Yes, ma'am.
We made history.
I apologize for that.
You were sick.
I was sick, I was still in. But anyway, all righty, folks, I'll call to order the regular meeting of Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors. Will all please rise, say pledge allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. All righty. Do we have an adoption of the agenda?
So made.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0.
Just one note, we've added an additional motion not an additional action item, but an additional motion in there on the declaration of emergency status to ratify it, and then also to terminate it, because we're beyond now, so we can go to termination.
Thank goodness.
Rather than trying to wait.
All righty. Mr. Nichols.
Yep, a few things to report, Mr. Chair, members of the board. So social services did, like they do most years, they did school supplies and backpacks for kids at the schools, and Riverside Mission, Lake Christian Church, Fluvanna Baptist Church, and Tenasca all participated with that and provided resources to support. Got a bunch of school supplies and 101 backpacks. And Jane Wilson, who normally coordinates it every year, did another great job this year getting that program coordinated for social services. And that's a big help for kids and families in need in our county. Habitat dedicated another home on August 19th at Houchins Place. And a nice family got settled in their new home there. And it's great because a couple of the kids, this is the first time they're going to have their own room in a house. And they were really excited. So it was great. It's a good event. The Bay Journal that is published here in the Commonwealth, and this is the online version, Leslie Middleton from Fluvanna had an article published in there about Pleasant Grove, and so you can pull this link up and see the article online in the Bay Journal. It's a nice article all about Pleasant Grove Park and the nature and the expansion of wildlife areas by the new trees and forests and type of flowers have been put in. Good publicity for the county there. The Shea property, we've closed on that in Columbia. That's the one that's in the red, marked in red here on the screen. Remember, we'd already purchased the other properties here in yellow, tore those structures down, but that Shea property was the one that was the disputed property. Mrs. Shea passed away in December. Her heirs wanted to donate that to the county, and that process is done, so now we own that parcel, and so we've got a contiguous piece there. Library's got a new and improved website. Looks great. Easy to use, and Cindy and her staff got that website cooking and ready to go, and everyone in the community to use. Parks and Rec program, although this is already over with, I was going to tell you about it at the last meeting, but on Friday, September 7th, they've got a new program in partnership with LMOA doing a teen night at the Ashland Clubhouse. And I don't know, Aaron, how did it go?
We had 18 kids show up,
right.
17 to 13.
Okay.
And that was the same day that they had the scare at the lake.
Okay.
And that kind of helped people with.
Yeah, but still, that's good. It's
not bad for the first one.
First event, so we'll see how that goes in the future. Great opportunity. That FEMA grant, unfortunately, was declined for the SCBAs, the breathing apparatus. Debbie is in the process of working up the new grant application that has to be in December, is it?
It should be February. It'll open in December.
Okay. Submitted in by February, and then we'll hear about it again sometime next year. We've got some other ideas on what to add in there, and got some tips on that today, and so we'll hope we get better consideration next time, because we've got to replace the SCBAs. The damage from the storm on Monday night was pretty impressive, in a few hours of that big rainstorm we had. This is Union Mills Road, just west of the FSPCA, where that low area is down there. This culvert washed out.
Steger Creek,
right, exactly. And so it's going to be closed about 2 weeks for repairs. So that section of Union Mills will be local traffic only to folks to get to their houses, but that's it. They've already diverted the school bus routes and things around that. Here's a long list of things that were problems during the calls Monday night from either the VDOT or the fire departments. And only two of them are still closed, and that's that Union Mills one and then the Transco Road, which we think they'll be completed by either today or tomorrow. Might have been completed by the end of today, but you can see there's a lot of where the water was coming over, or pipes were damaged, or...
So Harrisbrook is dry. I mean, that was a lot of water. That's at the bottom.
Yeah, but the water on the Ravana goes down really fast if the rain stops. Mm-hmm. It takes so much from upstream, but then it goes down really fast.
Yeah.
Because fortunately, we've had some dry, complete dryness or almost complete dryness since then, but it was pretty impressive down there. And, you can't fly a plane and land in then, so... the meals tax information for voters, I'd sent some information out to all the board members. So on the website, Harris got this posted up in the last couple of days. And come on. It's just a little slow right now. But anyway, on the website and then in flyers that we'll put around the community. Dang, this is slow. Right? So this page has the proposed meals tax on there, what you should know about the proposed meals tax, some facts about it, more details. And then at the bottom of it has the frequently asked questions that I sent to all of you, and also the link to the sample ballot so they can see the ballot language. This flyer that I've got in my hand is the one that I sent you. This, we're getting these printed, and this will be distributed around the community in the post offices and any community places, churches and things, so that people can look at that and call and ask questions.
When will you have the flyers done?
Pardon?
When will those flyers be ready?
You know when they'll be back?
I ordered them today. They should be here within a week.
Yeah. Okay, because I have a big meeting the fifth Sunday. 10 churches.
Yeah, we should have them back before the fifth,
okay.
The Sunday date. So.
All right.
And I'll get some to each of you at your next meeting so you've got them, but also we'll start distributing around to locations all around the county. So. Let's see. And our new economic development coordinator, I sent you that notice out last week, but our new economic development coordinator is on board. Jennifer Edwards is here with us tonight. Jennifer started last Monday while I was on vacation so she could have a peaceful week while I was gone. But she got around to see a lot of folks. We already sent her to training this week. And she comes to us from the University of South Alabama, where she was the projects coordinator and was an instructor in the college courses there in business. She also has a master's degree from the University of Southern Mississippi in economic and workforce development, and a lot of experience in small business development and entrepreneurship, and we're delighted to have her on board. So, Jennifer, welcome. Glad to have you here. You'll be seeing her at our meetings, and even tonight, later on, we've got some business to talk about. She'll be there for that. So.
She's already been in one meeting.
Indeed, yep.
Yeah.
She's been popping into meetings, and we sent her to training Tuesday and half of today
at
the VITA training, which happened to be just perfectly timed, and there was one slot left in, so we got her in the train, so that was great.
Yeah.
And remember, your regular meetings kind of just the regular meetings in October and November, but remember, your November meeting, the second one, will be on Tuesday the 20th instead of Wednesday the 21st because of the Thanksgiving holiday, and so that was, you had adopted that earlier this year. Now, we are going to have a work session in December, I think, pre-budget stuff. I think that's the first December meeting, but in October, November, I don't think we need any additional work sessions at this time. But so just keep in mind that Tuesday meeting, and I'll remind you again between now and then. Any questions I can answer for the board?
Nope. All righty. Thank you very much. Hearing no questions, we will now open the first round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium, state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes. On topic and directed to the board. Anyone wish to address the board at this time? Seeing none, I'm going to close the first round of public comment. Public hearings, we have none, so we'll move forward with action matters. H, Board of Supervisors meeting dates change. Mr. Nichols, could
So just look at the screen there. It's just the two meetings in January. You're normally scheduled to meet the 2nd and the 16th. We would propose you meet the 9th and the 23rd. That just moves it back 1 week, but it keeps away from the holiday week because that's actually a holiday up until the night of the 1st. And so people will be out of town and things. And by doing it the 9th and changing the one from the 16th to the 23rd, it gives you the normal 2 weeks between and then 2 weeks to your next meeting.
So we're going to the 2nd and 4th instead of the 1st and 3rd.
Right.
Okay, do we have a motion?
So, Mayor.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien. Seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. Aye. Library assistant position reclassification, Ms. Altman.
I think Ms. Rice will do this one.
I got ready to say, okay, Ms. Rice.
We like to keep it under control.
I'll go.
Try. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
So we had a library assistant actually get transferred into the finance department several weeks ago, which created an opening and an opportunity in the library to do some steps or options for promotion in the library that we weren't able to implement earlier. And what we're looking to do is take the library assistant position, which are both full-time, and just create a one and a two. One person going into a one, the other person going into a two, and then taking the part-time person to go into a two spot as well, based on experience, education, and all of the other qualifications that go with the programming. In doing that, there are some additional duties that are going to be assigned to the assistant too, and that's going to alleviate some of the pressure on the director. She'll be able to delegate responsibility. And some of those things are financial, supervisory, and also they would be in charge of the library when Cindy's not there. So with additional duties comes the understandable jump in a pay band. We're looking to bump them up two pay bands for the assistant two position. At this time, we still have the position vacant, and we're not sure whether we're going to hire for an assistant one or two. But in working through some of the numbers, even if we hired at a two, we're not looking at any additional cost for this year. She does have vacancy savings she can use. So, do you have any questions?
What about next year? You said not this year, but what would be the increase next year?
Well, the next year would be the increase between the other assistant's pay, what she was at, and whatever the new assistant's pay is, if there's any. Sometimes they come in at less, too.
That would amount to how much a year then?
That's to be determined.
It may be about $1,000 if it came in. Many employees come in lower than the previous person, so there may be a saving. But if they came in like at that pay band and happened to be just above the other one, it's probably within $1,000 or $1,500 a year. But it'll be in their budget for that year.
What's the range? What's the range on the pay band now?
I can pull it up online real quick. So if you look at the bottom of this one, there's 7. It goes from 26,000 to 39,000, and the 9 goes from 29,000 to 43,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So essentially, there's not a large difference in the salary range either. Basically, we're just looking to differentiate between skill sets, and obviously somebody could come in without any experience versus somebody that we hire that has management and financial and supervisory and all of those other things. So, and we're also looking for a way to be able to promote people from within down the road, where currently that's not in place right now.
Yeah, it doesn't add a position to the library. It puts ladders in, just like we've done in every other department, so
right.
That people can stay with us longer and get promoted from within. But the dollars will be relatively small. It really depends on who the next person comes in. If the next person comes in with a master's degree or something, they may even come in a little higher than the previous person.
or they may come in lower, as many do.
All right, are there any other questions?
No, I move that the Board of Supervisors approve the updated and reclassified library assistant position description as presented and revising position 8831 library assistant pay band 7 to position 8831/8832 library assistant 1 and 2 pay band 7 and 9.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. All right, we've got this is the next one. J, Virginia Information Technologies Agency FY19 Wireless E911 PSAP Grant, Mr. Grandstaff.
One of you, I think Ms. Eager asked what PSAP was. PSAP is the Public Safety Access Point. It relates to E911 systems around the world. It's just kind of an acronym that relates to all those. So it's tied on to almost any grant you see to do with communication systems.
Well, good evening.
Ms. Parsons is going to do the brief because she's the subject matter expert, so Mike got her to come do it.
We'll see how much subject matter I am.
I was going to say, I talked to Mr. Grant, if you're not Mr. Grant.
I really appreciate your time. Appreciate you letting me come in and take part in your meeting. I'm here to talk about the changes that are coming with 911, where we're going, what the state's going to pay, what your responsibility will be, and what you can and what you can't do, what you need to do, and things of that nature. So I hope that it'll be beneficial for you. I feel like I'm screaming. So I'm one of the 7 regional coordinators throughout the state with VITA, the Integrated Services Program. And part of our responsibilities is to be a liaison, a funding source, somebody that can come in and be a consultant, things of that nature to the localities. We do work under the governing or under the direction of the state 911 board. We are state employees, so I've got 28 years public safety experience with local government and state government, so I've kind of been in this business for a long time. And for Fluvanna County, during this transition to Next Generation 911, I can be viewed as your free project manager. So this time when I say, hey, I'm here from the state and I'm here to help, I truly am. It is the truth, right? So you have a couple of handouts that I circulated around. They are just a handout about Next Generation 911 and a handout about the GIS in 911 because it is a critical component. We're going to just run through a quick, frequently used acronym, just give you an overview of the 911 as it is now and where it's going, the role of your GIS department, the deployment plan and the scheduling, and the cost and funding and the path forward and what you all need to do and be prepared for because your deployment date is soon. So, the challenges that we have to the existing 911 center or the existing 911 system is that 50 years ago this year was the first 911 call made in a little town called Haleyville, Alabama. Roll Tide to your new economic director. 50 years ago. So we've been operating on the same 911 system for 50 years. It's an old analog system. It's outdated. And in the state of Virginia, we have 9 independent networks that are not connected at all, which means that, you know, potential for failure for the 911 calls. It's extremely limited. The 911 system as it is now cannot receive, for the most part, text messaging, pictures, videos, things of that nature. We can't process and transfer data as good as we should be able to between all of our PSATs around the country. The core analog technology is just going away. It's not going to be here anymore. And because we can't communicate with our citizens like everybody communicates by text message and email, picture mail, nobody really talks on the phone anymore or sends any correspondence if it's not by an electronic device. We recognize we have to change the 911 system to be able to accommodate our deaf folks and our speech impaired folks. We have to be able to communicate with them as well. So that's why part of the changes that are coming. So if you can see, sorry, my allergies are getting the best of me too today. So if you can see, here's a diagram of how the current 911 network works. You've got all of your telephone providers, your cell phone providers, and your Vonage phones, internet-based phones. They all, when they dial 911, all of that correspondence goes to a selective router, a box somewhere provided by CenturyLink or Verizon or whoever the local telephone company is. That selective router switch grabs what we refer to in the 911 world as an MSAG, a master street address guide. And basically, it's nothing but an Excel spreadsheet of all of Fluvanna County's 911 addresses and who they belong to and their phone numbers associated with them. It takes that MSAG and it grabs what we call a location database, an ALI, automatic location database, and it sends it all over to the call handling equipment in the 911 center. So that 911 center gets that call from all of these different sources, and then it interfaces with their CAD systems, their voice logging, their radio systems, any other equipment that's in the 911 center. That's how it looks now. With the next generation 911, it's all going to be IP-based, so it's all going to be internet-based, modern internet protocol. It's going to be the solution to the existing challenges because call delivery can be faster. So we're going away from the circuits that deliver calls to the 911 centers, which are analog, to a packet-switched IP technology. So all of that's going to change. 911 call and data transfer. So right now, if you dial 911 from wherever you are in Fluvanna County, and the 911 center answers the call, they get your phone number and your location. When they have to transfer that call to Louisa or Albemarle or wherever the case may be, they have to transfer that call to a 10-digit number. The PSAP, or the 911 center that gets that call from Fluvanna County, loses all of that information that Fluvanna got, as the 911 system is now. With the new system, all of that information will transfer over to the next county or maybe the other end of the state. The PSAPs are going to have the ability to transfer calls to anywhere in the state of Virginia, as well as the neighboring agencies in surrounding states that we're working with right now, Maryland, D.C., Tennessee, West Virginia, and Tennessee already has the AT&T solution for next generation 911, and North Carolina is getting ready to sign as well. So they're going to have the ability to transfer all of that information, which is going to save them time. It's going to save lives, right? So if they can save time and not have to stay on the phone and get that information over to the proper 911 center, then it's going to speed up the process of getting responders to them in a timely manner. Again, we talk about secure receipt of multimedia communications, the text messaging, the videos, the pictures that people are going to be able to send to the 911 centers. There is a mandate in 2020 that every 911 center in the state of Virginia has to be deployed to receive text messaging in their 911 center. That just recently passed, so July 1st, 2020. So again, what is next generation 911? This is going to be a shared network, and I know you all have probably heard of FirstNet. This is what we refer to as ESINET, or some may say ESINET, but it's an emergency services IP-based network, a shared network that is one network, the network of networks, right? And that's what everybody says. It's a network of network, and it's going to do all this stuff. But it is going to be a single network throughout the Commonwealth of Virginia. Every PSAP, which is 121, are going to be hooked to this or able to access this ESINET. It's got a high level of redundancy and resiliency. Anytime you have redundancy, you decrease your chances of failovers. It's got different points of interconnect, so there's all these steps in place to take care of any chance of failure. So because we want to go to this IP-based network, or because we have to, we don't have a choice. It is nationwide. It's not just the Commonwealth of Virginia. It's going to require a complete upgrade of the 911 centers across the state. They have to meet the demands of the public and the needs of the telecommunications technologies that are out there. There's probably, we think we communicate by cell phones and tablets and computers. There's probably so many more things that I'm not even familiar with. Unless my grandchildren have told me about it, I probably don't know about it. So it does require this upgrade of the system. So what does that mean for you? So as you can see, the network is still kind of the same. You're still going to have a regular phone. You're still going to have a cell phone. You're still going to have a Vonage phone that all are capable of dialing 911. When they do with the next generation 911 network, they're going to go over to a positioning center and a text control center so they can get their phone calls and their text messages. They will then go to a point of interconnect that's designated
and depending on where you are in the state of Virginia. And those, the information that we got before from that spreadsheet with all the phone numbers and the addresses are now going to be based on road center lines, address points, and the PSAP boundaries. And when I talk about PSAP boundaries, I don't mean where Louvana meets Louisa. It's not an administrative boundary. It's actually an emergency response boundary. And it will take that 911 call and say, okay, you are right in the middle of Route 15 at the Louisa-Louvana line. That 911 call should go to Louvana or Louisa, whichever the case may be. It takes that. Those are the three core services of Next Generation 911, and it sends it all back through the call handling equipment. So the bottom line is it just uses a different way of grabbing your location instead of just based on a phone number and an address, or maybe somebody's got a phone in a barn we didn't know about. Maybe somebody's got a phone in a basement we didn't know about of an old abandoned house. All this is going to be based on actual physical locations. So the role of the GIS in Next Generation 911, I think you all contract your GIS out to Heart and Profit. They're doing a really good job for you. And your data is up to where it needs to be, with the exception of just a little bit. Our threshold is 98%, and on the address points, it's 97.6. It's not going to take much at all to fix that data, so we recognize and kudos to Heart and Profit or whoever else may help with your GIS data. It's one of the most time-consuming efforts, so it has to be kept up. Just because we fix our data and we maintain it to the standards now does not mean that we can let it go. We have to keep going. We have to keep this data consistent. We have to keep it at least 98% threshold in order to work on the emergency services network. It takes a lot of time to prepare the data. We have to validate all the data that we get from Fluvanna County. Has to be validated and make sure that we've got the right information. And it has to be synchronized with the old tabular-based spreadsheet with all of your phone numbers and addresses on it. So again, you're 99.1% accurate on your road center lines, which is wonderful, and the address points is 97.6. And in your migration proposal that we delivered to Fluvanna, it tells you what is needed to correct that 97.6 to 98%, and it's very easily done. And if it's something that WeVita can help you with, we have resources for that instead of paying somebody to do that as well. So you can see the proposed employment schedule. You all are on the Charlottesville Farm Bill selective router pair with CenturyLink. Your schedule for deployment is January 2020 to June 2020. We are deploying in 6-month windows to give you time to correct things that need to be corrected 3 months prior to the actual deployment date. So that is your deployment window. It can be shifted around a little bit. We hope not, but it might be. It may go up, and it may come quicker, but we definitely give you time to prepare for that. And then this is a map that even I can't see with my new progressive lens glasses. So if you can see it, good for you, but it's just basically the same thing in a map to show you how the state of Virginia is going to be deployed. So the migration proposal that I talk about, WeVita developed this document based on the Fairfax County contract. And Fairfax County contract is in place. They're getting ready to deploy Next Generation 911 probably next month, I'm saying. So Fairfax chose the AT&T solution. The reason we are saying that it's a good contract is because we, number one, don't have the resources to put things out for bid. So we said we had our people review the contract. We feel like it's fair. It was a competitive process. So we're here to promote the contract itself, not actually. We're not saying AT&T is the best solution. We're just saying the Fairfax contract is a good contract, and they just so happen to choose AT&T. The migration proposal gives you a link to that contract for your procurement folks and your county attorneys, so all of that is available for review in that contract as well as on our website. This migration proposal gives you information on the AT&T solution. We evaluated your 911 center to see exactly where you needed to be to get this information and to be ready for Next Generation 911, so all of that's in the proposal. We gave you a description of the network diagram that's for redundancy and resiliency, and what that means with the AT&T solution is that they are going to run their own fiber to be able to put this internet service into your 911 center, so it won't be on existing fiber. It'll all be on its own little fiber network. And the associated cost and financial support that's offered by the Virginia 911 Services Board, we'll go over that. And there are a couple of corrections that Michael and I were talking about earlier, so I'll give you those exact figures when we get to that slide. Any questions so far? Nothing? Okay, good. So, the status of Page County. Your call handling equipment in the 911 center needs an upgrade. However, it doesn't need much of an upgrade because CenturyLink and Michael have stayed on top of this, and we have the latest and the best version right now that we can get. So Levanta County is on 6.0, Michael? Was that what it was?
I think we're on
6.1. And you have to be the version, software version 7.2. So since you've already paid CenturyLink for maintenance, you should already get that upgrade free of charge. It should not cost you anything. They should keep you on the latest and greatest because you have a maintenance contract with them. Now, we recommend that call handling equipment be replaced every 5 years, which you all do for replacement, and we'll get into that when we get into the cost. The CADA mapping, your CADA mapping systems are okay. Your voice logger is a trunk-based recording logger right now. If Michael wants to keep the trunk in the position base like he's got, then there'll be a little bit of a, if your recorder's IP capable, then AT&T can provide, or whoever you choose can provide a solution for that, and it should be included in the cost. So again, your GIS is in great shape. There's minimal work to be done, and like I said, biggest staff can help if we need to. So on page 13 and 14 of the migration proposal, there is a table in there that talks about the total non-reoccurring cost for the transition to Next Generation 911. That figure should be, instead of 244, 812, 10, it should be 338, 351, 86. The recurring cost, if you go with AT&T on the Fairfax County contract, is $5,562.49. Fluvanna currently pays, and we think this is probably just a copy and paste error when Stephanie and Steve were doing the migration proposals. So currently, they pay $1,665 a month. So the difference in what Fluvanna will have to pay to AT&T versus what they pay now is $3,897.49. So we realize that we're telling you, you've got to change your 911 system in 2 years. And we're telling you that your costs are going to go from $1,665 to $5,562, which is a big jump. So we're giving you, you know, first of all, it's 2018. Your 2020 budget's probably getting ready to get started pretty soon. So we wanted to give you those figures. So because we realize that it's not your fault, the state's coming in and saying, hey, we're making you change the 911 system. For 24 months from the date Fluvanna County deploys, we will absorb those costs with the state.
What frequency is that, that cost?
That cost is for the delivery of 911 calls to the...
How many months or year or a year? How does that run?
It is monthly. Currently right now, yeah, it's monthly. Okay. 1665. And the $5,562.49 is what you'll have to pay if you sign with the Fairfax County contract with the AT&T.
On a monthly basis?
Monthly basis, yes, sir. It is on a monthly basis. For 24 months... Like, say, if you deploy March 1st of 2020, from March 1st of 2020 to March 1st, 2022, VITA will pay the difference in that delta between the two costs of what you currently pay now versus what it's going to cost you. Now, how we're going to pay that is going to be an annual lump sum. So you're still going to be able, you still need to budget for the $5,562.49. And then around January, February each year, we will give you the lump sum for that year. So we're not going to have AT&T bill us and bill you all and have all this back and forth. So they will bill you to be on this EZNet, this emergency services network, and we give you a lump sum back every year.
About $35,000,
$40,000
a year.
That's way above my pay. Actually, yeah. So actually, what?
$3,000 a month. Be 36.
Yeah. So the total cost for 2 years that we will reimburse you for, based on the figures that Michael and I just looked at, $93,539.76. And that will be over a 2 year period. So you'll get a portion of it the first year that you're in deployment, and then you'll get the rest of it the next time, and then after that it falls in the hands of Playback.
So $46,000 a year. Almost 47.
Yeah, I was thinking about the increase, basically.
Right.
Over the cost of the paper.
Okay.
It's tremendous.
It is a lot. However, once the contracts get signed, we have, or once the agreements with AT&T, we have seen maybe a little bit of decrease, but we've also seen an increase too.
Is there any competition in this much?
There are other vendors that do supply this emergency services network, Motorola being one of them, and there are some other vendors, and my apologies for not having their names run off, but I can get that to Michael if you need it.
But that was a competitively awarded contract.
Very competitive.
That Fairfax did. I mean, it was followed the state law, it was competitively awarded. Right. So they got the best deal that they could out of all the vendors that applied for that contract. That's why we would potentially tap off that contract rather than trying to write our own contract and put it out, because it's already been competitively bid. So.
Now, you do have, so once we get past this, we have seen some astronomical numbers, to be honest with you. So you all, that's a lot of money for a small locality, I understand, but trust me when I say it could be worse across the state, because a lot of it depends, like Floyd County's in a whole different situation. They're not with any major telephone company at all. They're in a little citizen telephone is the one that provides their 911 services to them.
And this is federal or state law?
This is nationwide. It is everywhere nationwide, and it has to happen. So doing nothing is not an option, you know.
It's nice you mandate everything.
Right, we're here to help. We're from the state, we're here to help.
I can see that.
Right?
For your years, absolutely, you're going to help.
Right, right.
You're going to say, here it is.
So what happens is, you know, when you decide on what you're going to do, if you sign the agreement with AT&T, there's a process that has to go through. Then you'll have more of an exact dollar figure when you all get into the contract negotiations with them, because obviously this is what they have provided us. But we need to make sure that you all know exactly what you're going to have to be. And this is what we think it is. We haven't had any indication that it's going to go up.
Sounds like Medicare with the state.
It does. You're right. Yeah. I'm almost there. So what we want to tell you is this is a local decision for you all to deploy. We're not telling you you have to deploy with AT&T, but we're telling you you have to deploy Next Generation 911. We're telling you that we're going to pay $338,000, all of the transition costs that it costs to get you where you need to be. The state is absorbing that. You all will only be responsible in 2 years for the difference that you're paying now for CenturyLink to give you the 911 calls versus AT&T to give you the 911 calls, or whoever you choose. If you choose another provider, we will come back and give you another proposal based on that provider's cost that they give us, like if you did want to go with Motorola. We'll come back and we'll go through this again with you, and we'll tell you what we're going to pay, and we'll tell you what their costs are, and we'll tell you what you have to pay. So we're not just like solely, we are promoting the Fairfax County contract, not so much a vendor. They just happen to be the one that got the contract.
They've already got one awarded. That's one in hand.
They did have one awarded. It is a 10-year contract. So by the time, and it's 10 years from the date that Fairfax County signed it, so from the time you all get deployed, you'll have 7 years left on that contract. Now, if you get on this contract and you decide you absolutely hate AT&T, you don't have to stay on it. It's written in the contract that you can get out of it with a 30-day written notice to them, and you can get another provider. So all of it is still your choice and still what you want to do. It's just something that we don't have time. We don't have the resources to send anybody out to provide an RFP. We don't have time to go out for bid. We just don't have the people to do that, because we're actually running around, you know, trying to inform our decision makers in our localities as to what's going on. So when we get to, are there other options? There certainly are other options. Virginia Beach right now is issuing an RFP. They quite possibly might have another vendor, another contract that you could write off of. We have not seen that RFP. It was supposed to be out early in the year. We've still not seen it, so I don't know when it'll be out. And then you have the option of issuing your own RFP if you have the people to do that and the folks that want to do that, then that's your option as well. And when I talk about deployment on the selective router payer, we, the state, also have to manage our cost. So there's 7 or 8 localities on this Charlottesville Farmville selective router, the actual router that sends the 911 calls to the PSAC. If one person says we don't want to deploy right now, we're not ready right now, we need to... I don't know, whatever reasoning that you need to tell us about, it delays the entire selective route repair, so it delays everybody. So we realize that, you know, this is a things that you all need to be talking about. You need to talk to your county attorneys, your folks, everybody that's a decision maker. We realize that you've got to talk to them, and it might be a little lengthier than what you think, right? It's a lot of work, and a lot of, you got to move some figures around, so we realize that too. If something happens, and let's just say Flavanna says, no, we're not going to do it right now, we're going to go out to bid. So when that happens, when you go out to bid, it delays everybody else. So we beat it. We'll continue, and as long as there's one PSAT, one 911 center on the CenturyLink router, they still get all this money every month from the state. Because we pay a portion of that. You all pay some and we pay some. We actually pay for your trunk lines that come into your 911 centers to get those installed and things of that nature. You're paying for the delivery of 911 calls through those trunk lines that we put in. So if you decide not to, as long as one person's on that CenturyLink router and CenturyLink is still having to deliver 911 calls to you, then there's a cost associated with that. We'll help you out as much as we can. We'll do what we can for as long as we can. But eventually, those costs are going to have to be shifted to the one who's holding the ball and not running with it, I guess, so to speak. I'm not really that much of a ball, but, you know. So, therefore, we have to deploy everybody at certain times. Everybody that's on each selected router, we've on those nine independent networks, we've got to deploy those all together. And deployment is like everything with the state. It starts in the east and it goes west. Everything but with the Virginia Beach folks going out for bid, it could be that it does not start with them. It may start in Fauquier County or it might start in Fredericksburg. So you all could be shifted in that depending on what they do, because again, if Virginia Beach is going out for bid, it delays the whole selective route repair. Questions right now on that?
I would think maybe a lot of you would be going out for bid with those prices.
I hope not.
Well, I know you talked about the delay and all that.
I mean, we'll see what the RFP from Virginia Beach looks like, because we can tap off that one too. It'll
yeah.
be a better than bid contract, and we can tap off that one as
then
well.
Then we're in another group with it.
No, it doesn't matter which contract we ride off of. It's going to end up being the same result, same services. Just we're just looking for the best price for it. But we don't want to write our own RFP and put it out. That's a big delay and a lot more work. But because somebody's writing RFPs, putting them on the street, and competitively bidding those, we'll be able to tap off whichever one's best for us, depending on the timing.
Yeah, the state said they had a tremendous surplus this year, so maybe we could use some of that.
So our budget is different from the state of Virginia budget. We're the 911 budget, so we are in our own little category. And that's where all these, like, $338,000 that's coming from to help Flavanna County, that's where that money is coming from out of the 911 budget. There are other localities that are in the millions of dollars right now. So it is varying across the state. It is a collaborative effort. You have to be involved because you all are the decision makers. Your PSAT manager, Michael, your GIS folks, the Hurt and Profit folks, your IT people, your procurement division, everybody, your grant managers, everybody has to be involved in this process so that everybody knows what's going on. We have to be involved in it, obviously, because, again, we have to manage cost, and we have it. Once this starts, it's going to be on a very tight timeline, so we have to keep up with that timeline, and we have to keep a schedule, and we have to start hammering down, you know, knocking on Michael's door saying, hey, are you ready? You got 3 months. Are you ready? Did you get this ready? Did you get that ready? So we have to keep on top of that too. So when I say free project management, it is me. Your solution provider, whoever you choose, if you go with AT&T or if you go with the Virginia Beach contractor, whatever you choose to do, I can tell you that I'm pretty sure the costs are going to be around the same, if not more, with others. I have heard. I don't know for sure. I've not seen that in writing. But I feel certain that any time a company comes in and puts fiber in an area and gives you a service that's going to be more robust and more more conducive to serving your citizens, then it's going to cost more, like everything. So you have to keep them involved. Your 911 service provider right now, CenturyLink, you have to keep them involved. And they are your maintenance provider for the call handling equipment and the PSAP, so they all have to be involved as well. So on the path forward, your all's responsibility is to review that migration proposal, and I will send Michael one with the figures that we found that were errors. I'll send him one and he could distribute it out. I'll have that to you tomorrow. so he can distribute it out. Your county folks need to look at the Fairfax County contract. There is a process if you choose to go with what we're proposing right now, then there is a process that Levana County submits a proposal acceptance letter. And all that is you're signing, there's not even a signature on it. It's just, it is saying that we want to participate with the Fairfax County contract. We want VITA to pay that $338,000 up front for us. We don't want all that filtered through our finance department, because I think when we submit financial information, I don't know how it comes in. It kind of looks a little weird to your finance folks for reimbursement. So you tell us whether you want us to pay those transition costs through VITA, and you have nothing to do with that part of it. And then once you sign that, that's where your funding comes in. That's where we say, okay, Levana needs $338,351.
When were we notified of this?
We've been talking about this for quite some time, for several years now. I have been with VITA for about 2 years, 2.5 years, and I obviously jumped right in with it in the middle of it. But it's been nationwide. You know, we have reached out to your, I think my boss has talked to the Association of Counties and several different agencies. We host webinars on it. Those are available for replay to give you information. We've got all kinds of information. So it's been going on for several years. It's just hit Virginia, you know, running. We're running with it.
And Cheryl will provide briefs to you in some of her updates, her emergency service updates, about next generation 911 that we would be going to. We just didn't have any cost figures at those times. So
if you submit that proposal acceptance letter, then Levana County has 3 months to sign a contract with AT&T. And we'll talk about AT&T now, because that's who we're talking about right now. If there's another vendor, then we'll revisit that. But you still have 3 months to sign a contract with them. Once the contract is signed, their project management will get in touch with Michael, and they'll all be, they'll hit the ground running, and he'll have a timeline, and he'll have a better idea of the exact date and the things, when they're going to come in here with fiber and all that kind of stuff. AT&T, the participation, the proposal acceptance letter is for VITA, saying, yes, we want to go with whatever Fairfax is doing and use AT&T. Then AT&T has a participation agreement that you all have to sign with them once you sign the contract. So it's their contract, the participation agreement. But the acceptance letter is just to us saying, you know, we're going to go on board with this and go ahead and do what you got to do, be the way it's magic wand.
Okay, so the deadline then, when would that be that we have to be on board?
So it's a rolling funding cycle. The first deadline that you all need to look at is November.
This coming
November. There's a timeline that you all have to submit that proposal acceptance letter 45 days prior to each one of our 911 board meetings. And I'll make sure Michael's got that table. But November's the next.
Does that mean that $3,500 will kick in at that point?
No, from the date you deploy. So from the date AT&T says y'all are next generation 911, that's when your money starts. So 2020.
Okay.
Yeah, then that's if everything's on schedule.
Right.
I was just wondering about our budget.
That's what I was talking to Eric already. We're already
But just keep in mind, for 2 years, we reimburse you for that. So you really got more than a year and a half to plan for that. You've actually got till 2022 is when you all start absorbing those costs.
We're having a fiber internet talk with CVAC. Can that work together in any way? No.
Largely no, but what we'll do is we'll let them know that we've got tubes in the ground.
I was going to say,
fiber through it, it may save a smidge, but that's basically a sunk cost of getting fiber there. That's not a really big thing. It's a long-term cost. It's going to be a problem for us.
And you have to realize, too, this is 911 lines. This is not just an internet. It's an actual 911 database. So all that's been protected all these years. You're not supposed to use that database for anything but 911. So I can't speak for AT&T, but I can tell you I feel certain they will want their own pipeline, or maybe their own line coming in through those pipes, because it is 911, and it's totally different from just an internet-based access.
Because now, when you say fiber across everything, does that mean we have to have fiber throughout the county?
They will run fiber from your 911 center to their points of interconnect, or to a place that they can get their points of interconnect. There is a diagram in the proposal that shows how they have proposed to run that fiber through Pluvanna. And Michael, you, if you've got it, or if you can, yeah, it's in that proposal, and it shows how they're going to run. But, and it's because of redundancy and diversity, because we have to make sure that this is a system that does not fail when your citizens call 911.
But they're not running fiber like to the fire stations,
no,
and
no,
rescue
no.
squads and things like
no.
that. This is from our 911 center to their trunk.
Okay. We're not getting caught in any duplication on it.
So that was my only thought with the big thing we did a couple years ago with the schools. Could they use any of that? That's just, they can use the pipes, but you can't use it.
They could potentially put it in the pipe that's in the ground, but it depends on how much they want to segregate it. They definitely won't use our fiber, but they might be use the tube. But we'll see. That's, again, that's a relatively nominal cost. But.
And it is a cost that we're paying for. So if you can get fiber and a cost that the state's paying for, personally, and I'm not an IT person, I work for an IT agency, but anyway, if you can get fiber in an area, and I cannot speak for AT&T, but that could potentially, maybe, in a few years to come.
What page, Michael?
Ten?
So what part of the fiber is going to responsibility of AT&T?
Right.
That's what that is.
Maybe 12.
I think you did.
Yeah.
They've got two. One going to Charlottesville, one going to Goodsland.
So we have backup 1911 center.
Yeah, okay.
Right. So that's the diagram of what they are proposing.
So you read that, and then the Charlottesville line, and then you've got the Goodsland line.
Kind of like what we talked about, having the big systems that we just paid for with 911 or with the different counties that we have backups if we had the big one up there.
I'm not sure if it's the same thing.
Well, I mean,
essentially they're going to
make sure we have backup
to where they are. Yes, and they'll provide the redundancy.
And what can happen is by, you know, so if something catastrophic happens in Pluvanna and your 911 center gets wiped out, Michael's going to be able to log on to a portal and automatically direct those 911 calls to Louisa, Charlottesville, Lamar, wherever he wants to send those to. So you're still going to have somebody that's going to answer 911 calls.
So in the layman's term,
it's all good.
Wait, no.
Is that what I'm saying?
How is 911 functioning differently other than having different connections, more of a regional? What makes that any different from what we're doing now? If I had to explain to my constituents a fee or this next generation, how do I explain that to them? What's different?
So you explain to them, it's kind of like going from an old flip phone to a digital smartphone. And the iPhones, like the flip phones, are analog technology, which tends to work most everywhere, right?
Rotary phones.
So all this is going to be
modernized,
piped through a digital network.
Yeah.
Through a digital network that's going to be more secure and more resilient.
That's a shock.
Yeah.
I understand that, but I'm still trying to think why.
My question is for Michael. With all this that we're getting, is this going to replace what we just got, or is this adding on to the system that we just got over there?
What system are you talking about?
The CAD system.
Oh, that has nothing to do with CAD.
It has nothing to do with CAD. Okay, I just wanted to check.
5 years ago, we contracted with CenturyLink and replaced all of our call handle equipment. So it's due for replacement anyway.
Okay, we didn't replace that when we did put in the new CAD system.
No.
We just gave y'all a
lot of
new furniture.
The CAD system.
So that was all software. Yeah. The CAD system was all
CAD
software.
CAD system is computer-aided dispatch, but that's not truly your
I thought we did the whole thing. We didn't do the whole thing. We just did a part of it.
Yeah, nothing to do with 911.
That was my one question.
So we couldn't, I know we can't keep the system we have. I know we can't. But the system has been.
We're going to keep the CAD system, but we got to just get
the CAD.
New phone system
the
to
new,
go with it.
Yes.
This new system.
And on your table of costs on that page 10, We are giving you $150,000.
It's working now. Why do we? Is this just,
yeah, that's kind of what baffles me.
Somebody's brain starts thinking. What's the catastrophe? Are we losing lives? What would have to happen where we would be left out? I know we have no decisions about it. We have it mandated. But it's like, why?
It's because of those doggone computer guys that come up with all that stuff. They change the stuff every 2 years so that we have to buy brand new stuff. Now, I'm not going to say anything too terrible because I don't want to offend anybody by sitting up here. But they upgrade those systems.
Like,
I was real good with that flip phone, and they made me get that other one.
So on your proposal, so it's like anything. If you don't upgrade a software in something, if you don't keep up with the current, then it's not going to function as well, and you run the risk of somebody dialing 911 and not getting to Michael at all for dispatching a call. So those old trunk lines, and two,
we run down to the church.
CenturyLink, Verizon, all of these telephone companies want out of the 911 business. So they're kind of forcing our hands to they don't want to deliver 911 calls anymore. So on that page 10 of that document, we realize that, you need to upgrade your call handling equipment. We are giving you $150,000 to do so, which it should not cost that much, but we are also providing that, the $150,000 in my mail on the 13th.
But then after that, how much is the cost in a year?
So if, no, that doesn't, but the call handling equipment itself is nothing but new computers and making sure you're on the right software. So we recommend that you upgrade that every 5 years. Mm-hmm. So in another 5 years, there's still going to be some funding process through us, through the 911 board, that says, okay, yeah, we recognize that everybody in the state's going to have to upgrade their call handling equipment, so we're going to give you another $150,000. So we're always going to make sure, because we, the 911 board, are focused on the delivery of calls. That's all we're focused on. Your CAD system, that's great. We hope it works really well, but basically the telephone system in your PSAP is all that we need to make sure that's running for the delivery of those 911 calls so you can get responders out. But we do give you...
Yeah, so when I looked at the diagram, the first two diagrams that you showed, they went from here to here. And then with the new system, seems like they're even going through more connections.
Okay, so right now, there are 9 different networks in the state of Virginia without any possibility of what happens if CenturyLink, if their hub goes down. You don't have a backup. CenturyLink's down, they're down. You don't get your 911 calls. With the new system, there are 3 different point of interconnects, and there is failover. So if something happens to this point of interconnect, it switches to the next one. So you still get your 911 calls. And you can see that there's $150,000 to replace your call handling equipment. There's firewalls and things that we pay for to get you where you need to be. So there is, again, it's $338,351, if I can read mine right, that we are going to pay for. So it's a huge, we realize your costs are going to go up some, but it is a huge payment that we're paying up front to get you where we need to be.
And we don't have a choice. It's either do it now or do it later. We can put it off or we can go ahead and get it done.
You don't have a choice not to go to this new 911. Right. Now, you have a choice as to how you do it, but you don't have a choice of saying, well, we're not going to go to it, because eventually CenturyLink is going to say, all right, Clevana, if y'all are the only one in the state that's not going to go on this estimate, we're going to stock you with $100,000 a year. Or more, because we can't control that cost. We can't control what they charge you. Right now, it's tariffed a little bit, so there is a tariff on what they charge you. But once that everybody goes off of this CenturyLink provider, there is no tariff anymore. So
they kind of have you over a barrel now, don't they?
Well, we're
yes,
but we have to spend it all the money.
We have to what?
We're spending our own money, so it's all taxed.
Yeah, but eventually it will come to us.
Yes, but still.
It's the surcharge on our 911 calls, those 75 cents, $1.50 surcharge. That's where our budget comes from.
Okay.
So that is the budget that we are providing that $338,000 with. They have you over Maryland. I understand that from an administrative standpoint, because I was an administrator in a locality and had to do budgeting and had to, I had to make this case to my board of supervisors and also had to make the case too. I understand that, but the bottom line is that we in the United States have a duty to protect our citizens and make sure that they get help when they need it, and that's what 911 is all about, and it's hard.
As a little bit of likeness, my grandmother, she cranked the phone.
Yeah.
And she was tickled to death to have.
I know, right? I don't remember that one, but I do remember that rotary dial.
Two party lines. I remember two.
I remember the two party lines.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much. You've been very insightful. Do we have a motion? I mean, your questions? I mean, guys, we got to do it. So.
Well, we're just trying to get some answers.
Oh,
get
absolutely.
Get some feel to it. I mean, this is.
Put it in perspective, that $1,000 a month increase, it calculates up to 1/400 of a cent per Bluvanna resident. So I think we're beating this bush pretty hard.
It's 4,000.
No, she's going $1,500 to $5,000.
We're
paying $1,600.
The delta is actually $38.97.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're up to one.
Come on. We'll just let it go, Sensen.
No, but we have to do it, and there's a lot of reasons to do it. So I mean, it's enormously different type of system than what we currently have. You're talking about analog lines that can be saturated because you need to maintain the analog lines from that standpoint. Going to voice lines that you can actually have coming from different locations. You can send the data, you can text the data. There's just an enormous benefit to the citizenry, and it's a very nominal cost overall. So I think we're really kind of.
I think we understand all that. It's just that, you know, you have to be able to get a deeper understanding so I can talk to people.
Because we're going to be asked questions, and we've got to be able to answer.
Now, we will come again, free project management, if you need to have a public hearing. I will be more than, I know, right? Wait, it is 4 hours from my house. Just keep that in mind. So if you need us to come back, we will definitely come back and have a public hearing on it. We'll do whatever we can to help educate your constituents. Then you all have to answer to them and help explain this to them. So we will come back as much as you need us to. And I'll try to get everything.
And it's always nice if you have a scenario or something that can happen where people can put it into a real life situation. You know?
The scenario is you don't get anybody if you're having a heart attack. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
That's something that's hard.
Or your
house is on fire.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I worked the state EOC this week, and, you know, I was kind of chomping at the bits, hoping that no PSAP went down in the state of Virginia, and it did not. Thankfully, they all kept their 911 lines. But that's the real life. When somebody's house is on fire or something.
All right, you guys.
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
Okay.
Do we have a motion?
I'll move the first motion.
Yes, ma'am.
I move to approve the application and sign the proposal acceptance letter for the next generation 911. NG911 grant program award from the Virginia 911 Services Board in the estimated amount of $246,000 to fund replacement of voice logging software and other E911 related equipment.
We have a second.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion 1 passes 5-0. Do we have motion 2?
Further, I move to authorize the county administrator to execute contracts and agreements associated with this grant, subject to approval as defined by the county attorney, and authorize a supplemental application from fiscal year 19 county budget in the amount of $246,000 to revenue and expenditure accounts assigned by finance.
Do we have a second? Motion made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Mrs. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you. Move forward with KFCPS Capital Reserve Maintenance Funds Supplemental Appropriation, Mr. Dahl.
Mr. Chair, members of the board.
Chair Pass, at 3 o'clock?
Yes, we're going warm. I'm not leaving. I'm just going to have a question.
Okay. Excuse me.
It's So if you remember two or three meetings ago, the middle school project had unspent debt proceeds, principal and interest proceeds, about 100 grand. We came back to you and said that you can either, this middle school can use those for a different project, or we can take them back into the general fund as an interest expense reimbursement, and then we can do whatever those funds, with those funds once we get them in the general fund. The board decided that to go that route, option two, to kind of let them go back into the general fund. The schools at that time brought to the board that they had other needs, specifically the Abrams building and abatement need that they needed to take care of. So we did that. The funds went back to the general fund. We requisitioned close to that $100,000. So now we're just requesting a supplemental appropriation to the school's capital reserve maintenance fund for $72,001.15. And then you're going to, later on in the meeting, there's going to be a capital reserve maintenance fund request for the same amount for the schools for the abatement. And I can answer any questions if you have them.
Any questions?
Let's see. I was wondering about that. That's Carysbrook? Was that
Carysbrook?
No, Abrams.
Abrams building. That's the Abrams building.
Which one was that we've been talking about for the last year?
The middle school project was the $4 million debt service project. These are leftover funds out of that.
Out of the middle school renovation.
It should only be done, used at the middle school, unless we just put the money back in fund balance.
And Carysbrook was the roof that right. They're working on at this point in time, but that's a different
but
project.
But they didn't need all of that money for the middle school.
Correct.
And a contractor checked it out and found out that they only needed to do around certain small areas.
That's the
No.
So not another one?
Don't yeah, fix the contract, sir. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, the $4 million, just nominally, $4 million that you took out in debt service to do the big middle school project, there's some left in that, and the bond financier said you could only use it for middle school related stuff, so we decided just to put it back into fund balance. That's what you all decided. Later on, you may want to use it for some other purpose, but this is just putting it back into fund balance.
Yeah, I'm ahead of it. So I'm thinking about Carysbrook.
Yeah, so we put $100,000 back in the fund balance, and then we're appropriating $72,000 into the capital reserve.
This is the one where they have the room that's got the asbestos in this.
Yeah.
The room board falling through. Yes, sir. All righty. Do I have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation of $72,001.15 from the unassigned fund balance to the year 19 FCPS capital reserve maintenance fund, CRMF, parentheses.
Second. Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
The next action item.
All right, let me read it.
Sorry.
Capital improvement plan budget transfer. There you go.
There we go. Next action item. So we've been going through a lot of our CIP projects that are outstanding, that have balances, and just kind of determining, are they completed? Have we, you know, do we maybe have different needs going on right now? So myself, Eric Pollitt, Mr. Nichols, and Mr. Stevens kind of went through some of these projects just to determine, one, are they completed, and what could we do differently with the funds? So if you see up on the screen, the four projects, the hydrogeologic study, there was funds approved some years ago to do some studies to determine water. Well, we've got a different source for water right now, so those funds are
needed.
Carysbrook roof replacement at the DSS and gym, kind of as my discussion item stated, the contractor determined that a full roof replacement wasn't needed. They were able to do some fixes to the roof, specifically, if I remember correctly, it was around some of the roof ventilation fans to fix the leak. So I don't remember what the original amount of that project was, but so there's $72,000 left in that. So there's that courthouse fire detection, and then the courthouse lighting. Both of those projects ended up coming in below what we anticipated. The courthouse lighting control and replacement ended up coming below, primarily because of the train project. Train did some fixes for that, so there were some items that we didn't need to do as part of the courthouse lighting controls. So for motion number one, we're requesting that those four projects, which total almost $138,000, be transferred to the county's capital reserve maintenance fund. And if you remember, during the fiscal year 19 budget process, the board didn't put any money into the county CRMF because we had talked about at some point that we knew there's going to be some projects that are outstanding out there that we could put funds into the county CRM. So that's motion number one. Motion number two, there was a building envelope renewal, just kind of basically the one kind of large overarching project that did a lot of building fixes. Throughout the years, Public Works and then through the facilities budget, one, they either pulled some smaller CRMF projects or they did them internally out of the facilities budget. So there's $120,000 left in that project. And some of the funds within that building envelope renewal project were also to do some historic courthouse repairs as well. Not to the degree that we're talking about, but so we're requesting that $120,000 go towards the additional fixes to the courthouse project.
You funded $75,000?
We're already funded $75,000 for that project in fiscal year 19, so this would bring forth about $195,000 for the courthouse project. And if you have any specific questions, Mr. Stevens can talk about that, but there's a lot of column repairs, eave repairs, painting, brick pointing, and whatever.
I think it was about $250,000 was the original estimate, so this would get it mostly started.
We're also reaching out to the Historical Society to see if they could possibly come up with any, if they know of any grant funds to put towards that project, too.
Now, are we ready to go with repairs and renovations to that building? Because it's, at one point, the Historical Society hadn't picked the color.
Yeah, a couple of years ago. That took 2 years to get the color. So.
Right. So what my concern is, if it's not ready, if we don't have contractors lined up and ready to go, I don't think we should do motion number two. I think it should wait until we have the people who are lined up and then move it.
Well,
the money, it's not going to cost the county anything. It's a CIP project. So it's for instance, like in your home budget, you set $500 aside to replace your air conditioner, and you leave it there, and it sits there, and still accrues interest in your bank account until you get ready to do it. So in this case, we're not going to do this 3 years from now. It's going to be done over the next year.
Sure?
Mr. Stevens, is this going to be started over the next year?
I have money, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
so we can't start the project and then come ask for the money.
Okay. I just need to be reassured that we are further along to getting this actually done instead of going on another 2 years. It looked like that for quite a long time.
Yep. And we've been asking for money for the last 4 years. And we got $75,000 this year. That's the first money we got for that courthouse. Been asking for $250,000 for 4 years. You. we haven't had the funding to do anything.
Yeah, right.
They've done emergency repairs when the roof broke. That was
the
trust
of their... Yes. Well, yeah. That's what, $20,000-$30,000 right
yes.
there.
But the $75,000 just got approved this year. We just don't want to wait until the following year to add more to it because we're going to piecemeal it. It's better to get the lump sum and put the contracts out and get it taken care of. So the board can not approve this and hold on to it. But then we can't award a contract until you give us the money.
We can talk about it.
And absolutely, without question. I'm just trying to give you the background on it. You all can decide whichever way you want to go, the impact of it.
So has the Historical Society made their decision on what color?
No.
Okay.
I don't care anymore. I'm going to
find
the correct colors.
Whatever extra paint you have, you're going to put it on there, right?
No, it's not extra paint. We'll be getting
it has to be special stuff.
Getting as close as we can to the correct colors, but if I can't get input from people after 2 years, then they've had their chance.
That's why it makes it tough.
Well, you are the ones that are going to have to live with that because you're right. The people that are going to come back about it. And as long as you continue to say we're getting it done, that will be just fine.
And we do need to have a certain amount of design work done on the columns themselves because we actually have to strip them
first.
They look
really bad.
Yep. Take a final decision on exactly how we're going to finish them. So there's going to be sort of balance.
You don't want
to work on the columns.
It's just not plain paint.
You can't design the reworking of them, but things like the shutters and the trim and that sort of thing, we can begin work on immediately. But, I mean, it's the last time it was, I was.
year, 10 or 11. Yeah, 10 or 11.
That type of thing should last longer than that. I'm not sure exactly what happened. What I suspect from looking at the thing is that areas were not prepped properly.
So they didn't strip it down like they should have. They just put it over top of stuff.
And the shutters were not just kind of hanging over.
Looked bad for a long time.
Some of them have fallen apart. And we're going to try to get the same people that did the shutters out the Pleasant Grove House, because they did an excellent job of actually replacing some of the ones that were missing. And you can just barely tell the new ones that were missing. They had to rebuild completely from the ones that they restored. They did a very good job. And I think we want somebody at least that caliber to do them here. And to be honest with you, the columns are going to be expensive. I mean, we're probably looking at $125,000 of the project, maybe more, just restoring the columns. Because they've been, well, to be perfectly blunt, restored incorrectly a couple times in the past.
And who oversees this project? Do you do that?
It would be me.
Okay.
We've got a couple of contractors that work for us regularly who specialize in restored restoration, but the same fellow who repairs up in the attic, mm-hmm. We'll be consulting with him, and he may or will be doing some of the design work for us.
So ultimately, what's your position with the Historical Society? Do they help you? Or?
Yes, they do. I mean, for some reason, we've just had a really difficult time with anybody giving us a straight-up answer for exactly what the color of the shutters should be, what the color of the trim should be, and things like that.
I think having the funding in place and maybe them knowing that we're going to be moving forward with the project really quick. And
well, if I announce that I'm going to make it orange and maroon.
Well, that's what I told them. We're going to make it lime green and end the discussion. Well, then he can send us the color within a couple of days. Now, I'm not sure that's even correct, and we're still going to go forward, but in any case, it is time to fix that building. It's only going to get worse, and
it's going to be more expensive too if we win.
It's already more expensive enough. That's crazy.
And the amount of funding that's there now, I appreciate that coming in, but it really is just enough to sort of get us just enough far enough into the project to get us in trouble and not be able to finish it. And we are still approaching the Historic Society about trying to raise some funding. We spent some. Sent some specific cost estimates over to Mr. Moss a couple of weeks ago so that he could take a look at it. You know, the shutters are estimated to be this, the columns are estimated to be that, so he could go out to whatever contacts he has to try to raise some money, and he is very good at it. So we're hoping to actually raise more money than if the deficit is, so that, and anything that he raises above.
Sure.
The deficit that we have, because just even adding this in doesn't give us the full budget.
It would be 55.
He gets more money, and then more money from this budget goes back into the general fund.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, I have a couple questions. Curry's Book roof replacement. That was the one that I mentioned earlier. A contractor, you say, had looked over that, and there were minor repairs in a way.
Social Services has a new roof, so that's just one month. But the project was for Social Services in the gymnasium, and we spent, there was 50,000
or 50,000. I think it was really 125,000.
The gymnasium, we had a contractor come in. He did a significant amount of repairs, and he estimated that we could get six to ten more years out of that roof. So it's going to come back again. It's not going away forever, but we're able to put it off and perhaps take care of some other things for now. And it'll end up back in the CIP probably in six or 7 years.
But we had talked about that like a year ago or earlier, hadn't we?
Well, yes, sir. But the money is slated for it. And what we're trying to do now is clean up.
The point I'm making is,
take the money back.
Within just the last several months, that we determined that we didn't need all that money. Is that not correct?
Yes, that's why we're
trying to put it. The point being is, that was put in, we were trying to get that money a year and a half ago. Isn't that the one that I talked to the jail about, the jail board?
No, you're thinking about the elementary school.
The elementary school.
I don't have anything to do with the school.
Yeah. Okay. I'm trying to find out which one that was.
Yeah, that was Carysbrook Elementary.
That's Carysbrook Elementary.
Okay. One more here. Courthouse lighting control and replacement, $17,000. Now, that was supposed to be saving electricity and energy. Is that correct?
Well, in all honesty, the lighting control replacement project was implemented before we started doing the train project.
The train project.
The train project. We had that money, and it was just before. It was the very same fiscal year that we started down the track with train. We had budgeted money to take care of the lighting control because we knew that the lighting controls that were built into this building when it was new were outdated. The company that made the equipment was abandoning that line of equipment and not going to be supporting it anymore. So
where did this money come from?
This is the leftover.
It's been budgeted in the CIP in the past.
So the one that says Carysbrook roof replacement, that was originally a $125,000 CIP project.
Okay.
It only ended up being $50,000, so there's 70-some thousand left.
Okay.
And we're asking, instead of putting the $70,000 just back straight to fund balance, take these funds that were in CIP projects and move it to CRM because you didn't fund CRM this year. And it's a prepaid way that doesn't add to the budget because it's already in the tax rate.
It's money that's already been budgeted and put in the tax rate and it's been accounted for. And what we're doing is realizing that we don't need as much as we thought for some of these projects. So we want to
shift
so that we can handle other projects.
What I'm trying to get an answer to is, what pot did this $17,000 come out of?
This money came from
CIP
fund projects.
It was originally from the fund balance, and it was a CIP project to replace the lighting control system.
So this had nothing to do with the loan money?
No.
Originally, it did not. Now, well, it is a bit complicated, but
you see, bottom
line is the lighting system in this building is about 100 times simpler than it used to be. I didn't design this building. I have no idea why such a complicated and intricate lighting control system was put in this building when it was new. But you could sit back there at that lighting control thing and, you know, change the dimmers on individual light bulbs throughout the building and things. And it was overkill for what we needed. So when we started talking to train and we were doing the LED switchover, we got a simplified plan for changing the lighting controls, which works much better. You have more direct control within the room that you're in, and you don't have to worry about modules that burn up and have to be replaced.
And saved us money. But the short answer is the $17,000 has nothing to do with the trams, with the ESCO contract, with the train contract.
That's what
nothing,
I want.
And nothing to do with the debt service that's related to the energy project.
You know why I'm asking that?
Sure, of course, sir.
Oh, because
we
might want
to pay back on the loan if we needed to.
What's that?
We should just pay on the loan if this was part of loan money.
No, but there was a contract when we borrowed the money. I think it was, 1% that we got the money for?
It was actually less, right?
0.9. Yeah,
0.91.
Whatever it was, and that money had to be used just for that program and not anything else.
Yes,
and I was wondering if we were mixing the money. And that's the bottom line.
It was sort of a bit of coincidence that came in the same CIP that we went down, and then because when we first started talking with Train about this project, we didn't know exactly what the scope was going to be. And when we realized that the scope was going to include lighting control changes, I put a halt to this project and we did not spend any money. Ultimately, some of the lighting changes did get folded into that loan that we got.
Right.
But it was one that Train had designed for us and set for us. And again, that's why we didn't end up needing to spend that money.
Very good. Thank you.
Good, Mr. Williams?
Yeah.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a CIP budget transfer of $187,988.46 from Hydrological Study Phase 1, $22,599.93. Carysbrook Roof Replacement, DSS and Gym, $72,516.90. Courthouse Fire Detection System, $25,683.31. Courthouse Lighting Control and Replacement, $17,152.32. To the County Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund, effective June 30th, 2018.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Motion passes 5-0. Motion number 2.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a CIP transfer of $120,130.21 for the building and envelope renewal and repair CIP project to the courthouse exterior renovation CIP project, effective June 30th, 2018.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. All righty, now it's Ms. Smith, declaration of local emergency?
Yes, sir.
Yep, I mean, this one's cut and dry.
Exactly.
Need you to read the first one?
Yep.
Vote on.
Anybody have a question for Ms. Smith? I mean, they did a great job. Thank God we didn't have the first part come in. The second part did a lot of damage, but we made it through.
And I ran into Chief Brent at about 2 o'clock in the morning. They were out there, you know, making sure.
One and five got hammered. We got one call the whole night. I mean, it was one line from Scottsville to Zion's Crossroads, and it just dumped.
Yeah, I was coming back.
Four King is same as us. I don't think they got much.
I was about half an hour after it all happened. There was still a lot of.
It went from Scottsville straight at Zion's Crossroads, and then when it started moving east, it just went on through us. I mean, we got rain for 30 minutes. Y'all got rain for 3 hours, like it's being dumped out of a bucket.
Yeah.
All righty. Motion number one.
I move to confirm the decision to declare a local emergency on Thursday, September 13th, 2018 at 12 p.m. in response to Hurricane Florence.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye.
All emergency actions have been taken and the imminent threat of a potential injury from Hurricane Florence having passed. I move to immediately end the local emergency for Humana County that was declared by the Acting County Administrator and Director of Emergency Management Service in Emergency Management for Humana County, Virginia, and was effective beginning 12 p.m. Thursday, September 13, 2018.
My boy was struggling.
Second. I'm operating about 3 hours.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. All right. M, policy 2.19, travel and business expenses, Mr. Nichols.
I've been working on this one for 6 years, and finally we've gotten this done and chopped through everybody, and everybody on staff and all the constitutional officers and agency heads all agree. This is a much simpler and easier way to do business, and certainly matches what the rest of the world has been doing for the last 20 years. And so now we're on a proposed plan to have a little more clarity on our travel and business expenses and to use it on a per diem basis when you travel, rather than a receipt for everything that goes on. Now, we did some actual cost estimates on that and found that it's pretty close on dollars, but it's vastly cheaper for us to process these claims than it is to do these receipts and go through them and try to process them, and less work for everybody involved. But this has honestly been in the federal government for 30 years and in almost local and state governments for the last 15 or 20 years.
The ponies finally got here.
Yeah, and we're just kind of following what the state does. The state has been doing for years too, and follows most of their same policies. But all the agency heads and constitutional officers and department heads have already reviewed it as well, and it includes some new forms, new travel forms, and updated processes.
Good. Yeah. All right.
Do that.
Truly, it's been 6 years. I started this the first 6 months I got here.
Do we have a motion?
I have a question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, on item two, candidates for specialized skill positions, not readily available in the county.
Yep.
I sort of disagree with that. I think a person needs, if they can't have a little bit of initiative and pay for their expenses to get to an interview, you know, I question whether you want to. I had 5 interviews once in about 10 days all the way down to Florida. And I paid for every cent for those interviews. Never entered my mind that they were supposed to pay my room and board and everything else. And I just think that that's getting quite bureaucratic.
Where is that? Which one?
Number two.
B2.
Mm-hmm.
Which one?
Two.
Number
two.
What's the number?
B2.
219-2 what?
Page 45.
Got it.
Right here it is. It's the first page. Personnel.
Mm-hmm. Authorized travel.
It's the standard in every travel expense most counties. And this would be for specialized positions like county administrator. If the county administrator is in North Carolina and you want that candidate to come, you have the alternative and option of paying for that trip or not paying for that trip.
Hustling up there, wouldn't worry about it. If I wanted the job, no.
The rules are a little different.
And also, too, they can come up here and tour the place. Go to Monticello on our money and everything else.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I don't approve of that. I mean, that one item I don't approve of, but the rest of us are.
One of the, not discrediting or discounting what you're saying, but one of the challenges we've run into, especially being a small county like this, is trying to find folks that have the special skills we need to fill these really important positions, because we're in competition with a lot of other localities, including Charlottesville itself. And sometimes we have to try and reach out a little bit further. And in order to get people to even consider coming here or talking with us or generate interest in the community itself, they need to see it. And so that's just one of the ways. It's kind of a recruiting technique. That's all it really is.
I could pay for candidates to move into that area.
So,
you did what, Moselle?
I said there are things that people pay to move.
They location expense.
Well, a perfect example is our new economic development coordinator. It's very, very difficult to find somebody with that skill set in the area. The folks that had applied, almost none of which were even in the state.
Right.
So
the 25 applicants for that job, there were about 5 or 6 from Virginia, most of which, one of which was qualified, most of which weren't. All the rest of them came from West Coast, South,
right.
North, and Miss Edwards came from Alabama.
Yeah, I'm having a problem with it.
We understand what you're saying.
But like a mileage.
It is certainly different today than the previous, but it's kind of the norm. And it doesn't say you're going to do it. It says you have the option to do it in your policy.
Yeah, I think to Mr. Weaver's point, if you limited it to whatever, 150-mile range, outside of 150-mile range, that makes more sense for free.
Oh, we wouldn't be paying expense for somebody in state.
This is
really for out-of-state expenses for somebody coming for a job if we wanted to interview them.
And
it's not required. It's potential.
Saying that we could if we wanted to.
Right.
It's a negotiating tactic with the person coming in.
And we've probably never done it, right?
I'd be glad for the interview.
I can't imagine that you haven't paid that before when you've interviewed county administrator candidates, but...
I don't know.
No, not. Not to my memory, we ever have.
You can easily take that. Those.
But that's not a have to. That's a can if we want
it's
to use
a tool.
That.
I just feel fairly strong about a person's
it says,
initiative.
May be considered an authorized traveler for up to 2 interview trips given a position. But anyway, whatever you want.
Let's make a motion.
Okay.
Is there any other comments about that one specific thing? None? Okay. Do we have a motion?
I move to approve policy 2.19, travel and business expenses, and the associated travel and business expenses.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-1. All right. We'll move forward with then safety management policies and form, Ms. Rice.
So in the spirit of moving things forward that have been in the hopper for a while, this is one, my understanding is it's kind of been sitting there ready to go, or at least be worked on for several years now. And what it is the staff has actually put together and developed a safety management program for the county, specific to the organization and the public both. The policy 6.1 is the guiding document for the program, and the other policies are kind of the instructions on how to execute what's in the first policy. So basically what the program encompasses, it establishes a cross-functional safety team. So this is a group of people, representatives from all the departments, will come together to work on this. And it provides guidelines for training for staff, and also possibly open to the public as well. We're still working through some of the details. It talks about inspections, and that's buildings, vehicles, other hazards, trying to identify areas where there could potentially be something harmful there. And it also lays out a process for reporting injuries, vehicle accidents, or any other type of hazard. And then finally, it gives us provisions so that we can start to implement some of these emergency response plans, like what do we do in the event of a hurricane or tornado when you've got people in these public buildings? We think we know, but we want to get better than that, right? So that's what this program is basically about. Do y'all have any questions for me?
Do we have any questions?
Any of the documents? There's a lot of papers, but...
Alrighty. Thank you so very much. Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the following county policies and form as presented. Policy 6.1, Safety Management Program. Policy 6.2, Injury, Incident, and Hazard Reporting. Form 6.2, Injury, Incident, Hazard Report, and Policy 6.3, Vehicle Accident Procedures.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Move forward. Oh, phone system agreement, Ms. Toller.
Good evening.
Good evening.
So, history behind this project. This is a CIP-funded project that was funded in FY16 for $144,925. This is a project to replace the phone system that is 15 or more years old. It's used by most of the county government offices, and it's to replace it with the voice over IP phone system. Offices served by the system here on this campus is administration building, courthouse, commonwealth attorney, public works, registrar, treasurer, and commissioner. Also served parts of the sheriff's office. This does not include the 911 system, but it includes other phones in the building. The library, also Pleasant Grove House, the pub, maintenance shop, community center, cooperative extension, and Fuzzy are all served by this phone system.
I have an observation. You don't mention social services.
They are not served by this phone system. They have their own phone system that's done through the state.
Okay.
So it's completely separate from ours, and we're not allowed to access it because of regulations brought down by the state.
And Carisbrook, is that, do they?
All the Carisbrook complex is covered. That's what it has on here, just not social services.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's another kind of silly, inefficient way that the Commonwealth runs, because these agencies just didn't make sense. The health department's here, and they're a state agency, but we're going to transition the phones in there. But for DSS, can't do it, so.
Because it's state mandated.
Right.
Because somebody told us we couldn't.
Yeah. So with our current system, our current phone system, our maintenance is done on a time and materials basis, making budgeting for it really difficult. Hardware failures in the existing system and difficulty in obtaining parts for repairs are key indicators that major outages of the system will continue to increase in frequency and severity. Our annual maintenance for the past 5 years, you can see, vary by year, anywhere from $1,700 up to $24,000 in a year just to maintain the system and keep it operating. So an RFP was issued in June 2018. We received 7 proposals. The committee reviewed all of them and decided Fulton Communications, they also do business as Vertical Communications, was chosen as the highest scoring proposal. Vertical Communications was founded in 2004, and they merged with Fulton Communications in 2014. They are proposing a Mitel My Voice business system. So they did base our pricing off of the National Joint Powers Alliance Cooperative Contract. They are a national organization for government education, nonprofit organizations, to leverage larger buying powers through cooperative contracts. One-time cost for the design, equipment, and installation is $114,891.66. We do have ongoing maintenance, which will cover everything. First year is no charge, it's under warranty. Second year, almost $8,000, and only goes up $100 a year after that. Any questions? And if you have technical questions, Andy's here to answer them because he's our technical guy.
I guess one of my questions would be, these are the last 5 years, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Naturally, the first 5 years would be less maintenance.
Correct.
So it looks to me like we would have compared 15th, 14th, 13th, and so on. Those would compare to these because these are the end of the 15th.
Yes, but you're also looking at a more complex system, a more reliable system, and you're looking at these as being able to balance our budget every year and know the numbers
are guaranteed expensive. Prices.
Yeah.
And you can't compare a 10-year-old figure with maintenance costs today. There's just no comparison in the dollars and cents of the two. So this is just what it's costing us now for the old system. But
what other proposals were needed?
There were 7 different proposals. We interviewed 3.
DISIS proposed a Cisco solution, and I forget the name of the company, but this other company also had Mitel, very similar to this one, not as robust. The licensing wasn't the same. This system will give us to be able to get into a unified communication without having to spend extra money for those that can use that kind of a feature. The other Mitel system just didn't have all of the same bells and whistles, and they actually were charging, they're quoting about $10,000 more.
Yeah, it was more. The ongoing maintenance was quite a bit more.
And their annual maintenance was probably another $3,000 or $4,000 more a year.
Is Mitel hardware proprietary?
Yes, it is. It's it is in a sense, I think that their phones, I'm not sure if their phones can be used on different systems, but you can't use other phones on their system. So it's not a completely closed environment. So like we have some Polycom conference phones that we could use in this system without having to pay for extra licenses and stuff like that. Excuse me.
And the total number of phones was how many? Like, how what was the total handset count?
I think it's close to 150.
Yeah, I believe that's about right,
150. It's spread out over so many places, and, you know, 10 here, 25 there, 30. I think it's about 150.
Is it in the contract settings?
How many bid on this did you say?
7.
But when we did the pre-bid, we had literally standing room only in the Morris room. We had so many vendors that came in there, and then after it was all said and done, only 7 actually got bids in.
And then you pick one out of the 7.
Out of the 7. Well, one of them priced themselves right out of the running because it was more than twice what we had budgeted.
Sure.
So that was kind of good.
But they interviewed 3 of the 7. But, yeah.
Right. There are 2 phones, an upgraded version and a downgraded version. The downgraded version, we're getting 146. The upgraded version, we're getting 14. And those are basically for receptions.
And still, the lower version that we're getting, I think, like, exceeds what we require by another 50%. Like we said, we need at least 12 lines on a phone, and I think they do 18 on the lower end ones.
So when you're down to 3, then you choose one of the 3.
Yes.
And do you negotiate then with them?
Yes. Yes.
And can you do any good with them once you get one-on-one?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. With this company, we didn't do a lot of negotiating yet because there will likely be additional work they're going to have to do when they come in, only because we know some of the cabling might have to be replaced. And stuff like that's not stuff we could find until they come in to do the system. So we still kind of have an unknown that may probably will not be the final figure.
So you think it will be less?
No.
It's
probably not.
It's still going to be under the total budget.
We're not negotiating. I'm always thinking about something less, not more.
No, unfortunately no. But we have room to negotiate with them for the additional work that they do. You know, if we're adding more to it, we have the opportunity to get a better price on what we're doing.
The one thing, too, with the phones, they were on the national contract, too, so that was already a predetermined lower price.
Right.
It was much lower than their list price.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Does that mean we're going to lose Shelley Wright's voice?
I hope so. Yeah, for 7 years.
All these kids. Ooh, I'm going to call 591-1900 so I can hear Shelley's voice.
Chiefs was at Bucks funeral.
Yeah. Right.
All right, any other questions, or do I have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the agreement between Savannah County and the Fulton Communications, Inc. in the amount of $114,891.66 for a new VoIP phone system and associated support, and further authorize the county administrator to execute the agreement subject to the county attorney approval and the form.
Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Ms. Seeger. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. There are no appointments. We now have presentations. 2018 County Staff Survey, Mr. Nichols.
So I'm going to go down a couple pages on here and get to this page. I'll try to load it up a little bit. All of you have got this in your, I think, in your blue folders, either the last meeting or Ms. Harris gave it to you this meeting.
Yeah.
And so we've been using the standard survey tool that I put together when we first got here every 2 years. We did it in 2012, 14, 16, and now in 18. And so we tried to mark on here, you know, what the scores were. You can see that in all 15 categories of those 15 questions, the highest scores over the last 7 years are this year. And then in the additional questions we asked, three of the four are the highest scores that we've ever gotten in this last year. And so you can see the progression of the scores, where they've gone up each year over the last 7 years. So that's all good. Now I'm going to go back and just do some highlights of that. We had 97 responses this time, which is a little more than last time. That's about two-thirds of the full-time staff. The highest rate response... The highest rated responses are these five. Of the 15 questions, these are the three highest. Treated with courtesy and respect, right supplies, opportunity to attend training, happy with my job, and enjoy being part of this organization. They were all 75% or higher on positive ratings. In the second section, the strongly positive responses, they were between 60 and 75%. You can see the five questions there that were in that category. And then the ones that we'll focus on for continued focus and improvement, the ones that are the lowest, all of them above 51% or higher, but those are the ones that that we'll work on most with the Tiger team as we look at policies and procedures and communication intro. And then the additional questions that we always ask on there, the four of them about rating our organization, those are the percentages, again, the highest we've had in three of those four categories, about how we are as an organization and what will be next year and what do you think about our organization and what do the citizens think. So again, the same 19 questions every year that we do. And then each year we add on some additional questions. The Tiger team, HR, county staff puts together what we think maybe items of interest for that year. Some years we've asked about benefits. Some years we've asked about wellness programs like this year. Some years we've asked about paid time off versus regular leave again this year. So these are the additional questions that were added up for this year. And one of the questions we wanted to know is, what do you think is more important, pay or benefits? And the vast majority of people said they're both equal. Financially, they're really not, because people don't really understand that. Pay is more beneficial to employees than benefits because of the tax benefits. But in most cases, people really want a good share of both. They want a reasonable pay and good benefits. On the evaluations, we wanted to know whether people are actually getting the evaluations, because sometimes it seems like there's a dearth of employee evaluation forms coming into the HR office to go into the personnel records. 52% of people said they're getting their evaluations done annually and using the county's form, another 18% using some other document. So that's 70%, which is great. But that means there's still 30% of people that either are just getting verbal appraisals or not getting any at all. And so we're going to work on that and try to remind supervisors. And it's a pretty easy process. It was a 9-page form when I got here. We turned it into a front-back form. And so it's not very difficult to do, but it's important to give feedback to your employees, formal feedback as well as ongoing feedback throughout the year. So we'll stress that again. And then we wanted to know if people wanted to hear about paid time off. Sorry, I can't get this thing off the screen. Dang it. There you go. Nope, get back up. We want to know what people thought about paid time off versus a PTO system versus the regular annual leave and sick leave system, and wanted to know if people were interested in hearing about that. A paid time off system gives a little bit more discretion to the employee on what they use their time off for. It helps avoid a little bit of people using sick leave or just taking time off. We see that especially with hybrid employees. There are three VRS retirement systems, VRS1, VRS2, and hybrid. The hybrid is the most recent one that was adopted in 2012. And in that case, people don't keep their sick leave in their pot because they get new sick leave every year. And because they have a paid short-term disability program that's paid by the county as required. So you'll see hybrid employees using a lot of sick leave towards the end of the year instead of annual leave. And is it for sick leave? It probably isn't. But there's really no way to do it. If they don't take more than 3 days, we don't have a way to ask for a doctor's note or things like that. But one of the ways to make time off a little more fair for everybody is to use a PTO system. So because the staff has said, more than half the staff said they're interested, we'll put out some information about it, but we'll talk about it for the next few months and see if there's any reason to investigate any changes. Some counties have gone to a PTO system. Lots of civilian companies have, some haven't. So that was just a question that was asked. The target team will look at it. And then again, the rest of the document that's in your folders has the question, what the scores were over the last 4 years, some charts of those same things. And then the additional added questions and what the data showed, some charts and just straight numbers. And then there was two questions asked. One, I would like the county to offer the following health and wellness activity program or contest at work. And so you've got a couple pages of comments about those types of things. That's one of the things that the Tiger team will work on this year, is putting together some health and wellness program options, and some at no cost, some may have some cost. Whatever they are, we'll bring those proposals to the board unless you're just routine things. And we'll try to meet the needs of the staff from offering some different health and wellness program options. And then the last question was just the general comments one. And again, mostly positive, but there's a couple pages of general comments from the survey. Every time we have a few comments that say, thanks for asking, thanks for doing the survey, and some complaining about a specific department or a specific function, or some asking for a variety of different things. But anyway, you can read through all the comments. And the Tiger team will get this whole report. This will go out to all staff tomorrow morning. And then the Tiger team will have it to start working on, because that's representatives of all the different departments. So any questions I can answer for the board on any specific areas?
On sick leave.
Yep.
They can accumulate that up to what?
Up to anything.
Anything?
Yes. Now, when you leave employment in Flavanna County,
that's what I'm
talking. Let's say you've got 6,000 hours of sick leave, because you've been here for 30 years.
There's a limit on it, is that right?
No, there is not. Well, there's not a limit on earning. There's a limit on payout. The county only pays, by our personnel policies, up to $2,500 towards sick leave.
When they leave. No matter how many.
No matter how much you've got.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
Schools pay $5,000. Okay, $5,000
when somebody leaves. ESS pays $5,000, schools pay $75,000.
Oh, $75,000, okay. So we're really low compared to most organizations. But in any case, that's what our current policy is, to pay up to 25% of their sick leave, not to exceed $2,500.
Okay.
Annual leave is up to the maximum amount they can earn in 1 year. So if they are a 160-hour-a-year employee, that's the maximum we'd pay out. Even if they had 300 hours, we'd only pay out 160. So that's what the current policy is.
School pays $7,000?
That's just $7,500 just for sick leave. I'm not sure what they do.
I'm just in the back of my mind doing math.
Annually, there might not be limits.
No, you can pay out whatever your annual leave is.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Is you've got the Park County employees get one thing and Park County employees get another. So.
Is the survey done in by departments at all or not?
No, because you can get two, because we're too small and you can get to two closely identified personal information, we've not asked it for a department. And so it's a really... That's a little bit of a commitment, because when somebody answers a question, sometimes they'll say on there, well, it's kind of hard to answer. Am I answering for the county or for my department? And the problem is, if in an organization where you only get 97 responses, you only have maybe 130 people that would normally participate, you could pretty easily identify down to people in small departments when you only have, you know, two employees or three employees in the department. So we purposely don't ask the department.
So the question, the first question should have about 50 something.
On which one?
The two questions. The first one, something about fitness.
Oh, yes. Those are extra questions, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's jumping around.
That's this one right here, ma'am. I'm sorry. It's...
Yes, I was...
That one,
yeah,
top of it.
Mm-hmm. Off of Father Heflin. So the Tiger team will take each of those...
No, they'll just take collectively, what if people, and the question we asked about health and wellness
right.
programs,
yeah.
what kind of health and wellness programs can we
mm-hmm.
can we do, can we afford,
right.
would work for our county? It may be a benefit through our insurer that's free. It may be providing, you know, time for people to do fitness walking during the day. It may be, you know, providing some alternative information about gym memberships. Because maybe the staff, all staff members don't know that they get a significantly discounted gym membership through the local gyms
right.
because they're a county employee.
Yes, but then
like
there were some comments in there that to me didn't have anything to do with the fitness, like community service activities.
Yeah, right here. Well, that it was all health and wellness programs, contests, so they kind of general.
Some people spent a lot of good time on their answers. And
yeah, some did.
Very inclusive and very well thought out, and I was just hoping that the Tiger team heard them and
well, I'll tell
some
you
way
what.
You can make comments.
Well, they definitely will. The Tiger team considers all these. Miss Rice leads that group, and they'll consider all this
mm-hmm.
and come up with alternatives and promotions and options. They're the ones that came up with the employee ethics statement.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that came up with the basic draft of the Learn Earn program, or the basic draft of our employee recognition program. That's why I put the Tiger team in place when I first got on board, because it represents all the departments.
Yeah.
And I will say this, when they talk about the volunteers possibly on a day, there's one day a year, and I forget what.
In September, the day of caring.
The day of caring.
We usually have people that participate in that, and our volunteer coordinator coordinates different projects that can be done for that.
All righty. Thank you very much.
Room for approval.
What's that?
There's some room for improvement. There's some room for improvement, I'd say.
All right.
Yeah.
Always.
It's worked with the highest ever, and there's always room for improvement.
We can't become complacent. All right. Thank you, Mr. Nickel. Consent agenda. Are there any items that need to be pulled from the consent agenda? All right, let me read the whole thing. All right, cue. Minutes of August 15, 2018, Kelly Billinger Harris, R. CRMF request air conditioning system in the Information Technology Department's workshop, Mr. Stevens. S. CRMF request FCPS blacktop repair, Mr. Stripling. T. CRMF request FCPS CES room partition, Mr. Stribling. U. CRMF request SC Abrams Academy abatement remote remodel. V. Virginia Information Technologies Agency FY20-8911-PSAP Education Program Grant Award, Mr. Grandslaff, and W. FY19-BOS Contingency Budget Transfer, Waste Container Rental, Eric Polite, XYZ, minutes of September 5th, 2018, Ms. Harris, and A. Accounts Payable Report, August 2018, Mr. Dahl. What needs to be pulled?
I'll make the motion.
All right, Mr. Joy. Yeah, real quick.
You're happy now?
We love you, sir.
I can't believe we made it through A and nothing was good.
I know you are. Wait till the next time.
Look at my 42.
Wait till the next
time. Don't tempt him. Leave him alone.
I maybe can find something that you like.
No, sir.
There's a charge for $1.50.
Mr. Nichols, put the motion on the board.
You want me to search through this?
Don't come in here anymore. She pulls up.
Read the motion, Mr. Weaver.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the consent agenda Q through A with accounts payable and payroll be ratified for August 2018 in the amount of $5,486,213.60.
Second motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. All right, is there any unfinished business?
I have something to bring up. I don't know if you would consider it new or unfinished.
Well, we'll make a decision because they're one right after the other.
Okay. We're facing the referendum on the meals tax.
Yes, ma'am.
And I'd like to discuss with you if the money that we raise from the meals tax could be put forward to lower our tax rate. So if we got $300,000.
Well, the first thing I need to ask is Mr. Payne, are we discussing something we need to discuss right now? I'm not cutting you off, Ms. Eager, but I know I saw Mr. Payne's eyebrows rise.
Well, I don't think you could do that now because this what the statute requires is if you're going to use the funds from the tax for a dedicated purpose, you have to specify that.
Is that state federal money?
No, I'm talking about the statute that authorizes the referendum.
Oh, okay.
So you have to decide that. That's not to say you couldn't use it for that purpose, but you can't specify that it can only be used for that purpose. If you're going to specify it to be used only for one purpose, you have to provide that in the
Okay.
In the order.
People have asked me about that and the complaint of our high real estate tax. I thought maybe this is a good way to encourage people to vote for it if they knew that they're.
I'm not sure that you can purely dedicate it because I don't know that you can obligate a future board to dedicate it for that purpose.
You probably can't, but you can't at this point because you've already the order has already been entered and you've already
the question is already on this
application. Now, that's not to say that you can't use the money for that purpose. You certainly can.
Okay. And I think it would be fair to say since you're going to ask. We are not proposing this resolution or this amendment referendum for a specific purpose, nor do we have an intent other than to help balance the tax base. Right now,
we're not taxing
this to raise money for schools right now or anything like that. We're actually doing this to diversify our tax base.
By definition, we're
reducing the tax base at that level.
Yeah, I just thought if it could be discussed, that it might be encouraging people to vote for it because they generally don't pass.
You can look at the positive things that can come from this. We could reduce the tax rate. We could use that to fund. One of the things that we talked about earlier is we did not get the grant for the new SCBAs, and that's going to be a
big bite.
Big bite. This could be used to offset the increase that the air pass.
We can increase your salary with this.
Yes, sir. That would be awesome.
Next May, I'm going to ask you that question again. So,
be
prepared for it.
Tell them it's to give the Board of Supervisors a raise.
It's already been voted down.
That was 2 years ago. You get to get out.
We can vote again on it then.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what I was thinking.
Right. These are all things that
you'll know by budget season whether it got approved or not. And if it did, then that will be your consideration during budget season because it won't go into effect until July 1st, which would be fiscal year 20. You'll be working on that budget. So theoretically, you could do that.
So you're talking about really a minimum of about $300,000.
We think so because we just don't know. But we've looked at all the counties around us and how much they get and what their population is and what their density is as far as number of restaurants and things. We think we're in the $300,000 to $600,000 range.
But that's only a few pennies.
Indeed, sir.
So what do you think citizens think that we are going to do if it's passed?
Well,
and what do you think citizens think we are going to do with that money?
What you all agreed to, and that was that the new revenue will help support capital improvements for our schools, our sheriff, fire, and rescue operations.
All right, I haven't seen the card. That's exactly what
this is the one I sent to all of you a while back. This is the same text as that one is. But so that's on there. It talks about diversifying the tax base. It doesn't give a strong pro or con because we can't.
But it does help.
Yes, you. Are we moving on? Are we done with that?
We can't really discuss that.
But a good discussion during budget.
All right.
For sure.
Any new business?
The only question I have is, are we discussing this or not?
I'm going to talk about it a little later.
Okay. And, um, And to that degree, is there anything that we need to mention since Mr. Bedkoff's here about this in the public or not? No. Well, appreciate your being here, as always.
Well, and you can have a chance to speak right now if you'd like to speak. I will now open the second round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium, state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak to the board at this time? Are you coming up there, Ms. Sheriff? Absolutely. Sir, you wear a gun. I'm not telling you that.
I'll let that advantage. I would just like to let the board know that during the preparations for the storm that Debbie Smith and Eric and Kelly and all the county staff as well as everybody in rescue, VDOT, everybody did an amazing job. We were ready for whatever came our way. Fortunately, it was just good training.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Sheriff. Very good. I'll say that because Mr. Dahl and I talked more than we've talked in a long time. We spoke quite a bit. All right. Anyone else? I don't even want to know what you said, Mr. Rosenau. All right. Seeing no one else, I'll close the second round of public comment. Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to provisions of Section 2.2.3711A1, Section 2.2.3711A5, Section 2.2.3711A6, Section 2.2.3711A7, Section 2.2.3711A8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing personnel, prospective industry, investment of funds, litigation, and legal matters. Make a very long meeting.
Second. You got turned that over.
All right. Got a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
I heard one vote.
Aye.
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 Thank you. All against? Chair votes aye. We're going to close session. Five.
No. Mr. Chair, I move to close the meeting be adjourned. The Savannah County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge one only public such this only public business matter lawfully exempt from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Second.
Sorry.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passed 5-0. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So we need a roll call vote.
Oh, shoot. Oh. I'm sorry. I said all of Ms. Zeger?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passed 5-0. Now motion to adjourn.
So be.
Okay. Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now adjourned.